to talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars. If you'd like to join us early, you can. That's a good time to do it. 602-508-0960. And you're welcome, like I said, to join us anytime you want if you have a car question. This portion of our show, Under the Hood, is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They have three locations, and they've been around since 1976. They're in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, Westside. At S&S Tire, they offer a comprehensive line of tires and many different brands. And what that means to you is that you can go in, and they'll look at your tires on your car, and then they'll give you a good, better, best kind of pricing structure with three different brands of tires, but all the same size. That's kind of special because few people have that kind of inventory. So from wheelbarrows to tractor tires and everything in between, S&S Tires has got it. They'll also balance your tires. Of course, they don't do wheelbarrow tires, but they'll balance your passenger car, light truck tires, motorhome tires. They do alignments and suspension work. So West Valley, just remember, S&S Tire. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. This is my wife, Renee, and she's here because I've been a little ornery this week, so she says that she has to babysit me.
That's right.
Ooh, boy.
Oh, boy.
All righty. Now, I'm going to talk about a couple of things that are just on my itch list.
Okay, your panty list.
Yeah, my wadded-up panty list. There's lots of newspaper articles in trade magazines.
Right.
And they're written, you have to be careful by who they're written for, written by, because you'll have this guy who used to be a shop owner, and he's now writing a column that is sponsored by some chemical company.
Okay.
And so he talks about all the chemicals, but it doesn't really tie him to the chemicals. He just talks about the chemicals. Then you got a retired shop owner or some up-and-coming shop owner that will tell everybody how to run their business. And how he's improved his bottom line by so many percentages by doing this, this, and this. So you get lots of junk and you have to sift through it. In my world, as you know, life is a straight line. There's not a whole lot of left and right in the business world. In
my personal life. I was going to say, wait a minute.
In my personal life, there is no straight line.
You're pretty much off the road most of the time.
But in the business life, it's pretty much straight down the road. There might be one lane on the business highway. There's not 20 lanes. Well, there is 20 lanes, but that doesn't mean that there's 20 good lanes. There's one good lane and 20 other lanes. So this is what it says. It talks about fuel pumps first, and it says that it's not unusual for a fuel pump to fail after 60, 70,000 miles on Ford, Chrysler, and GM, although Asian pumps will go 150,000. I have no idea where that came from. How many fuel pumps do we do a week? Two? Three?
Yes.
In tank fuel pumps?
Yes.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with Asian or Chevrolet or Ford or Chrysler. It has to do with the person driving the car. So then they go on to say, well, you will shorten the life of your fuel pump if you run it out of gas. Now, folks, the fuel pump is inside your gas tank. And it's cooled and lubricated by the gasoline in your tank. So if you run out of fuel, then you expose that fuel pump to no lubrication. It overheats, and it causes it to lose one of its nine lives. Then you've got the students at ASU who run off the bottom of the tank. So they're never above a quarter or a half. So as a result of that, they overheat their pumps intermittently as well. So my advice to everybody is keep it above a quarter tank. That helps you keep your pump alive for a longer period of time. And then they talk about dirt, rust, contamination inside the gas tank, poor quality gasoline. That's a nice thing to say, but in Arizona, we don't have that. We don't have dirt, we don't have rust, and we don't have fuel contamination or poor quality gasoline. We just don't. We have, stations that are out there today are moving hundreds of thousands of gallons of gas on a regular basis. Chances of you getting gasoline that's more than 5 days old is slim and none.
And you're talking about in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, there probably could be some outside the city in a small town.
Sure.
But you're talking about
how many gasoline tankers have you ordered?
A lot.
Yeah. Thousands.
Yes.
Okay. And how many gallons are in a a load of gasoline.
I think it was 9,000.
9,000. Okay, and our tanks in the ground were like tens, three
right.
tens.
Yes.
We had three levels. We had regular, middle grade, and super.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ordered 9,000 gallons of gas, it went... Actually, if you ordered a tanker, it could have been a third regular, a third mid-grade, and a third, because they have different compartments.
Right.
So how many times in all the years that we owned a gas station did we were accused of having water in our tanks, and we were accused of having poor gasoline, but it turned out to be something completely different.
Yeah, because we never, it was never in the ground that long. I would order it every 2 or 3 days, so there's no way that there was going to be water in there.
And in today's world... We were small compared to the super pumpers that surround our house and our business.
Yeah.
You're talking about QT.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about some of these big, giant pumpers that are doing a load a day.
Right.
So it's poor quality gasoline is not likely. Plus, the farm is right there at 59th Avenue in Van Buren. Folks, it's important to know that the gasoline comes into the farm, and then everybody puts their own little special juices in it. And so I tell the story, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
One time that the mobile driver showed up, and this was during the gas crunch, probably in the early 80s, because we went to mobile in 79.
Yes.
So in the early 80s, we had a gas crunch. We had lines, and we were open 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours a night for fuel and stuff. So the guy pulls in the middle of the night, and it was a tank waste truck, and he had come from California. So he dumped 9,000 gallons of, I think we had unleaded in it, and then he pulled a 5-gallon bucket out of the seat of his truck, and he pours it into the tank, and he goes, now it's mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the additive package for 9,000 gallons.
Yeah.
And I remember that as if it was yesterday. Now it's mobile. And then we had a conversation. He says, the gasoline that comes out of the lines is, you know, nobody's. And then they add additives to it to make it Chevron or Unit 76 or mobile or whoever. Getting back to dirty fuel injectors. That's a big deal.
Fuel injectors. Now you're going. Okay.
Yeah, this is the same article.
Okay.
I was looking at a car for a friend of mine the other day because he wanted me to look at it in Payson. And I looked at and it was a little old lady's car. It had 20,000 miles on this Ford Focus. And I said, do you have any maintenance records? And she says, yes, I do. And she gave me 5 oil change tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And she had done a wonderful job in having her oil changed exactly when she should. But in 2 of those had flushes. At 20,000 miles, just before 20,000 miles, they had flushed her injectors. 20,000 miles.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm going to ask you, do we have the ability to flush injectors at our shop?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
How often do you see that code come across the labor screen?
Not very often, unless there's a symptom for it.
And usually when we flush injectors, we're looking for better, worse, or the same.
Yeah.
So we're going to go ahead and run some injector flush through it, and if it's better, then we know we're going to continue on. But if it doesn't get any better, it's probably not the injector.
Right.
But there's spark plugs and compression and valves to check first,
mm-hmm.
and spark plug wires and coils. So oftentimes we find the problem long before we even get to the end of the diagnostic process.
Right.
Dirty fuel injectors can cause a loss of performance, fuel economy, as well as increased tailpipe emissions. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the symptoms you look at your fuel injectors. But to think that you're going to flush your fuel injectors at 20,000 miles and your car's going to love you and your car's going to last longer is crazy. Because
mm-hmm.
my mother didn't think that, and I think your mother didn't either. If a fuel additive fails to clean a dirty set of injectors, what do you do?
I go to whatever other symptoms or things that you were talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Go to something else.
Here's what this article says. If the fuel additive fails to clean dirty injectors, even with several repeated treatments, the next alternative is to have the injectors professionally cleaned on or off the vehicle. Even then, some injectors may be too badly clogged to be restored to like new conditions. So, if they haven't failed electronically and you can't clean them up, then you have to buy replacement injectors, and some customers may opt for a set of remands that are a little less money than new ones. Now, can you see the cost associated with that?
Yeah.
We're going to flush the fuel injectors, and then we're even with several repeated attempts.
Yeah, but then, $125 a piece or something like that.
And who's paying that?
That's right, customer.
Well, sometimes the shop will absorb it if they think at the end of the day, well, I know you're shaking your head. Sometimes the shop will absorb it.
Okay.
Okay? And then have the injectors professionally cleaned. Well, we have a tool to professionally clean them.
Right.
We have a tool to hang your fuel injectors in a glass beaker, and we can actually see the spray. We can actually see the pressure. We can actually see the fan. We can see all that jazz. Mm-hmm. And we can ultrasonically clean them. Do you know what else the guys use that machine for?
No, I have no idea.
To ultrasonically clean jewelry. So they'll put their wedding bands in there, or they'll put their wife's jewelry in the ultrasonic cleaner, and that's how everybody else cleans it.
I've never seen you do that. But
well,
okay.
I haven't. Mine rings dirty as it was 100 years ago. And so then you talk about all this stuff. It's not that way. It's not that way. If you determine that it's definitely the injector, then you identify the injector. Then you move the injector from one cylinder to the other. So if it's in five, you move it to six cylinder. And then if the problem moves and cylinder shows a contribution that's not as much as all the rest of them, then you're going to take the injector out and you're going to put a reman in it, mm-hmm. or you're going to put a new one in it. You're not going to play all these stupid games.
Right.
You only have one injector that's bad. And you don't know if it's electronically bad, and you don't know if it's plugged up, but you don't really care. The fix is just change the injector.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a guy in a diesel, you probably remember, the other day, and he said himself that he had a miss, and it had a code for number five cylinder. So we couldn't get it to act up. It ran perfectly while it was us. And the contribution as far as the engine, and what that means is we're going to look at the engine, and it's idling at 700 RPM. As we kill one cylinder at a time, we're going to lose 50 RPM. That's called contribution. So if you kill number five cylinder and you lose 10 RPM, something's wrong.
Right.
So if all of them are 50 and you lose 10, there's your problem. So we moved the injector, and it was a diesel, so it was kind of expensive to move the injectors, but we were adamant that we wanted to move the injector.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, fine, go ahead. So we moved 5 to 6 and 6 to 5.
1 minute.
The problem moved.
Right.
It's the injector.
Yep.
So bring it back. And now we're going to just replace number 6 because that's where the bad one is.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We're not going to replace them all most of the time. We'll do one at a time, even though they are probably going to go out, you know, after a time. But.
Well, and we never do them all at once.
Yeah.
Because we're not capable. If we were capable of knowing that the all of them were going to fail, and that brings up a case I'll tell you on the other side of the break, that's craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have that capability. Now, just real quick, I'm going to tell you a story about a shop owner who was looking at a $3,900 set of injectors on a diesel, and he talked everybody up to $9,300. Because if you have one bad diesel injector, you must replace them all.
Yeah.
And that's an ugly story, but I'll save you just that. He just talked everybody into it, and there was no evidence. And when it came time to get data in your hand, a test sheet or some kind of snapshot of your engine analyzer or your scanner, none of that was available.
Yeah.
There was no statistics. There was no data. There was no cylinder contribution. There was nothing other than we have one, we replaced them all. Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we don't have it anymore. Oh, so we can't really test them. No, we can't really test them. Why'd you do all of them when you only had one? This truck only had 110,000 miles on it. It's a diesel, so that means only 110. Oh, because if one fails, they're not far behind, and we're not going to do them one at a time because it's too expensive to do them one at a time. And the answer is you do them one at a time anyway.
Right, and it doesn't cost any more.
Exactly.
Down the road.
Right.
I mean, there's some duplication of labor on some things, but not on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You're going to do them one at a time. Okay, when we come back, oh, and the phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a comment, you're more than welcome. We'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. The lines are open. If you have a car question, comment, you want to take me to task, or make the other side of the argument, that's fine with me. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All righty. Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. He's been there for a very long time. If you drive up and down Washington since 1968, you'll see his sign. Phil and his staff are really good at transmission diagnostics and transmission repair. They handle the entire city of Phoenix for me. And every transmission is thoroughly tested in their new state-of-the-art dynamometer. And that means that they're going to find problems before they install it in your car and have to take it out, which is going to cost you another two or three days of downtime. So if you have a transmission problem you want someone to address and you can duplicate it, you're always welcome to stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. You've been involved in the analysis of labor rates in our geographical area.
Yes.
Okay. So we move based on the average.
Right.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, what's the high number you remember the last time working?
I think $148 or $49 right. for a dealer.
And the dealers kind of dominate that top area.
Yes.
But definitely. They don't anymore.
They don't?
They don't.
Ooh. Okay.
Yep. They don't anymore. I took the lawnmower in.
Okay.
Now, what's the ratio between parts and labor, typically?
50-50.
Almost always.
Right.
Okay. So I took it in, and I had $85 worth of parts.
Okay.
Okay. I had a $2 part, a $5 part, an $11 part, a $9 part.
Okay.
So what do you think the labor is? Just off the top of your head, based on your experience.
Well, I don't know. I would say it'd be $100, but...
Okay. That's I wish it was $100.
Yeah.
It's $145 an hour for my lawnmower.
Really?
$464.81 to replace $85 worth of parts. And let me tell you again. I'm reading off the receipt. $464.81.
I think you better find a new lawnmower shop.
Well, I ain't going back there anymore.
No, kidding. That's crazy.
Yeah. And so now the average in our geographical area of at least 30 different shops, both dealers, independents, chain stores, small ones, big ones. Okay?
121 or something like that. I can't remember.
It's 125.
Oh, okay.
And I just looked at it.
Okay.
It's 125, and we're at?
118.
And then we also go to 125, the average for RVs. And old cars.
Older cars, okay. 90 and up, or below. Yeah.
Below, because it takes the gray-haired guys, and they're a little slower, and we have to usually pump a little coffee into them, and we have to, you know, dust them off with an air hose before they work on those old cars, because the young bucks can't do it.
They don't know.
They don't know.
How to do it. It's crazy.
You give them I think we've got a 72 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme. Now, Ron is one of our senior guys.
Right.
He's got the heads off of it, and the younger guys are looking over going, what are you doing to this? We're doing head gaskets on it. It's okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, but this is what I am finding out. I'm finding out that we're playing games now that I've never seen before. Here's the deal. Labor rate has always been it, and we've always used the same hours. So if that water pump pays 6 hours, pretty much everybody's at 6 hours.
And we look it up in a... Mitchell or whatever.
All data, Mitchell, whatever. Is the two software packages that virtually everybody has, including the dealers.
Right.
And so we all look it up the same. And we all look it up like my truck. A 2012 Dodge Cummins, one-ton dually, needs the water pump done, and it pays 7.9 hours. Everybody's going to be up a tenth one way or the other.
Right. Or they should be.
They should be. But they're not anymore. Okay? Just simple math. You're at $100 an hour, and it's a five-hour job. It's a $500 job, right?
Labor
job. However, if I was $50 an hour,
mm-hmm.
then what would I charge you to be to the same 500?
10
hours.
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing now, is they're dropping their labor rate, but they're raising their hours, and the net result is still the same. So we're starting to see some of those estimates that start with high hours and low dollars.
Yeah.
The customer's only focused on the dollars. Well, Mark, you're at 118 and this other guy down the street is 85. Well, let me see an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he didn't give me one. Well, go back and get one. Yeah. Ask him to write it down and sign his name. I do.
Right. Well, and the other thing that I get frustrated with is they call you and they want an estimate, and then you say, you know, well, what are your symptoms or what are they telling you? Well, half the time they don't know what they're telling you. But the symptoms don't match what they are getting repaired.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's silly for us to look up any kind of, you know, because comparing, they're selling them something they probably don't need.
Well, and then so many times you're right.
Yeah.
And I've told staff to stop doing those telephone estimates because we're wasting our time.
Yeah.
It's a situation where somebody calls in and says, what do you charge for a set of injectors? Well, then what symptoms do you have that necessitates a full set of injectors? Well, I don't know. Well, what did you tell them? Well, it didn't start good in the morning. So their diagnosis is a set of injectors. Yes. Well, we would not come to, we've never come to that conclusion. So as a result of that, unfortunately, and number two, I need your car here to bid it.
Right.
I need the exact VIN number, I need the production date, I need the motor size, I need the eighth digit of the VIN, the tenth digit of the VIN, and then I can give you a quick estimate. But I want to see what's wrong first.
Yeah, because as we saw from that 20,000 mile car that you just looked at, that lady didn't need that.
There's no way
flush
in God's greener.
You know, so it's frustrating that people are, you know, selling that.
It's a $29.95 oil change with a $189 injector flush.
Right.
Think about the profit margin on that.
Exactly.
We're talking about a guy with a can that hangs off the hood, and he hooks it up to the Schrader valve in the fuel system, and he charges the fuel system with some kind of fancy-dancy chemical.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, it's $189. Look at the profit margin on that. A can, maybe a $20 can. A technician, maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Even in the most expensive guy out there is going to be $30 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So he's at $15 worth of labor, $20 for a can, and we just cut a fat hog's ears off.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, those are things that we just want to bring to your attention.
Yeah.
Not everybody in the industry is ugly.
Right.
I would say that a third of the industry, and it could be a problem with just their ability.
Well, a lot of people have sales quotas too that they want, you know, their technicians and their service writers to meet. And
well, we've been interviewing service writers, and they tell us a lot of that. They say, I'm leaving because I can't make my sales quota, or they want me, you know, they want me to sell 8 oil changes a day. They want me to and match all of those with tire rotations and all that kind of
yeah.
stuff. There's a lot of us, you know, us included, that are just too busy to do that. It's hard to sell you stuff when we've got so many cars in there that are broken. So you fix the car and you move on.
Right.
So it's hard. Now, we divide it up, and we copied this from other shops. We divide it up into stuff that you need in the future and stuff that you need right now.
Yes.
And then we sign the work order, and we tell you exactly what we saw. We write it down on the work order so you can hand it to your husband, hand it to your wife, hand it to your Uncle Joe in Detroit, Michigan. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a matter that you have to regurgitate what we said. It's all written on the work order. And I would say 25% of the people in our industry in the independent market do that.
Sure.
25%, you know, do a good job at the communication level. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. We're going to be here for another hour and a half. So you got plenty of time, but the lines are wide open right now, and Gil's snoring in our headphones.
That's right.
So if you call him now, you'll wake him up. His name is Gil. I don't know what his last name is. He's new around here.
Oh, I know what his last name is.
I know,
but
too.
I'm not
We're coming back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till 12 noon, so if you'd like to join us, you can. Arthur's on the phone. I'm going to get to him in just about 20 seconds. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my buddy Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair, and he's located at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Tom's a good guy. You're more than welcome to walk into Tom's shop or make an appointment, and when you walk in, rummage through your purse or your pockets and say, I have a 100% discount coupon here from Mark Salem for your shop. And he'll just laugh. It's not because I make any money off your visit. I promise you I don't. It's just to let him know that you are a referral for me. So he's on his toes, extra good. Not that he needs to be, because this has never happened. But he does say to me, would you stop telling people that you gave them 100% discount on their first visit? And I said, none of them have produced the coupon, have they? And he says, no, of course not. So we laugh about that. But anyway, I-17 and Deer Valley, northwest corner, been around since 1983. A good guy. His name's Tom. That's Action Auto Repair. Arthur, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yes, I have a 1995 Dodge Spirit 3.0 V6, and it runs when it's cold like a brand new car, but when I'm driving down the road now and I come to a stoplight and the engine's warmed up and hot, it has this tendency of slowing down on its idle and then shutting off. Now I notice that when I'm going down the road or on the highway, it seems like I'm putting the brakes on because the car seems to be stalling as I'm driving 60 miles an hour. I bring it up to 70, and I don't have that trouble. I was just wondering if maybe I could have shorted my PCM when I went in and tried to troubleshoot my throttle position sensor and might have touched the ground.
No.
It says here.
No, 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 no. Do you have a check engine light on?
No.
Okay,
no.
We're done. So that's not it. So the fact of the matter is how many miles are on the Spirit?
128,000.
Okay. Well, the first thing, we have to pick which one we want to deal with first. I would think you'd go after the idle first. And I'd be looking at the throttle blades, see how dirty they are. I'd be looking at the idle air control motor, see how dirty it is. I'd be looking at the idle circuit that's computer controlled. So if the idle air control motor, the idle air control motor is a big cone, and it shuts off a hole of air. So the further back the cone, the more air. The further in, the less air. So you look at that and you go, holy mackerel. Arthur, you got 42 years worth of carbon inside this thing. So you take out the idle air control. Well, if you changed it, then that even makes it worse, Arthur, because you don't have the skill or the tools necessary to reset the idle air control motor. So you have to synchronize the idle air control motor with the throttle position sensor and the throttle blades and the idle. And so
there's no setting. There's no way to adjust it on this motor.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate this, but you're talking to somebody who fixes more cars in one day than you fixed all your life. Arthur, listen to me carefully. You have to synchronize the throttle position sensor reading with the throttle blade angle and the idle air control motor. I'm not saying that there's a screw that raises or lowers the idle, although I'm quite sure you've already touched that. But you have to reset and synchronize those electronic devices, one mechanical, two electronic, in order for the computer to properly hold your idle. As you drive down the road, the computer says, idle air control, open up a little bit more. Well, when it opens up a little bit more and there's no idle increase, then the computer starts scratching its head and says, oh, this doesn't look right. So this goes on and on and on, because when the computer opens up the idle air control motor and it sees the throttle blades open, then it can shut the idle air control motor and it lets the throttle blades let air in. But if those two aren't synchronized, the computer is completely confused. So you have to synchronize that. You're going to have to pay somebody to do that. I would imagine it's going to be somewhere between $50 and $100 to have somebody go in and reset and synchronize. Now, you may have not fixed this problem, so you may still have the problem or some semblance of that problem a little later on or immediately.
1 minute.
Because you may not have diagnosed it correctly but then created another problem. I suspect the problem was in the idle circuit to begin with, and then maybe when you put the idle air control motor in, and I don't know this for sure, then you created the problem at 60 miles an hour. So it sounds like an air problem to the motor, but it's not fuel because you wouldn't go 70 miles an hour. So I'm going to eliminate your fuel system altogether. It's not spark plugs because you haven't said anything about missing. So when you look at the big picture, it's still an idle circuit problem that probably initially manifested itself at idle and then now has moved to a higher speed because of the absence of synchronization. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. When we come back, we're going to talk about Freon. And Renee, old Freon lasts how many years in the atmosphere?
Oh, 30?
Nope.
100?
Nope.
I don't know.
And the new Freon lasts how many days in the atmosphere?
I don't even think it's a day. Isn't it hours?
Okay. Well, we'll find out. When we come back, I'm going to answer it. But you flunked the test already.
Darn it.
602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, thanks for sticking around. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is my wife, Renee. We've been in business since 1979 together. I've worked for her for that long, and we've been working on cars, motorhomes, boats, trailers. What else? We've been lawnmowers.
You name it. That's why. Oh, I guess because I don't know why you didn't have us fix the lawnmower after.
You know what?
That.
It was something that was so convenient for me. It was a riding one. We loaded it on the trailer and took it there. And I had so many other things on my plate that I thought for sure I could make more money doing what I need to do than paying for this lawnmower. And I'm going to tell you, I was WRONG.
Awesome.
Okay, that's why I had to spell it, though. This portion of Unhoosed is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair. They're the only shop in Mesa that I recommend you use. They are good people. They have ASE-certified technicians. They know the difference between right and wrong. They've been in business a very, very long time. They have a towing service if you need them. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They've been in the Mesa area for more than 30, 40 years. Actually, it's 40 years, almost 50 at the end of this decade. So if you're looking for a good shop and you don't have one, may I respectfully offer you Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Francis, good morning to you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have an 05 vehicle, got 23,000 miles on. Is there a myth about you should be changing the plug when a car or vehicle gets that old?
Well, in every way, shape, or form, the answer is yes.
It runs fine.
Okay. What does your owner's manual say?
I haven't looked at that.
Okay.
But I would say it should be changed.
No, that is true in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And in some of the 80s, but in 1996 when we went to fuel injection and computer operation, most of the spark plugs went to 60 to 100,000 mile change intervals.
Okay.
And if I were you, I wouldn't do anything until I was north of 60. Now, I know it's your wife's responsibility, but maybe ask her to open up the owner's manual and go to the maintenance section, and it will tell you what the car maker recommends. Now, there's three different kinds of spark plugs out there. So if I'm a shop owner, I say, hey, Francis, 60,000 miles, you need a set of spark plugs, and your manual says that as well. Francis, I've got a spark plug that's, you know, not too expensive, but it's not the best I got, and I'm just throwing numbers at you, Francis. These aren't good numbers. Those spark plugs are $100 and installed, and those are going to last you another 60. But I've got this step-up spark plug. And it's like $200, and it'll last 100,000 miles. And if you buy this spark plug that has three sparks instead of one, then they're $300, and you never have to change them again. Francis, if you hear that, just smile and say, put the spark plugs, put whatever you took out, put like ones back in. Thank you very much. That's what you say. Because there's big profit margin in those really fancy-dancy spark plugs, and there's a lot of people that find, you know, well, if I put the fancy-dancy spark plugs in, my car won't break down because it'll love me more. And of course, the spark plugs don't have anything to do with your water pump leaking. So just check your manual first, but I'm betting you're going to be in the 60 to 100 range. And Francis, you said something that just made me feel great. You said it's running fine.
Yeah.
So if it's running and starting fine hot and starting fine cold and your fuel economy hasn't plummeted, then I would bet $100 that you don't need spark plugs at 20,000 miles or wherever you're at.
Well, I was concerned about being seized in there and you have a hard time getting them out.
No, that was a problem. It was predominantly a problem with Fords. What kind of car is it?
Ford.
Okay, but well, let me change that. It was a predominantly problem with a Ford truck. It wasn't really cars. And I want to tell you something. If you're worried about that, then in the next oil change, ask the guy to put a wrench on one of them and just kind of, and if it pops and he spins it with his fingers, then you just tell him, put it right back in, and thank you very much. Now, there's times that we take the spark plugs for a walk, and there's times that we'll take the spark plugs out at 30, 40, 50, on ones that are well known for seizing up the spark plugs in the head, and then we'll put a little dielectric or some anti-seize on the threads and put them back in. Now here's what happens real quick. The end of the spark plug, do you know where the threads end close to the tip on the spark plug?
Right.
Okay. These spark plugs that are the problem, they extended too far into the cylinder, and that last thread would have it looks like an inner tube, a small inner tube on the last thread. It's a perfect circle of carbon, but it's bigger than the thread. So when you start backing out the spark plug, that carbon is like steel. So when you back out the spark plug, then is that big piece of carbon that goes all the way around the last thread of the spark plug. It just brings the threads with it. And I mean, you are in big trouble when that happens. Now, what we know now today is number one, we don't use that spark plug because it's a wrong spark plug. And so we know that we use the shorter thread. We also know that if we put some oil in each one of the cylinders and we crank it over and let it sit overnight, the oil will soften the carbon so that the spark plugs come out easier. So,
yeah.
What? So you said it was a Ford, and you purposely left that out, Francis, when you said it was an 05. You didn't tell me it was a Ford. You were
teasing. He was trying to challenge you.
He was teasing me.
Yeah, that's
he was
right.
teasing. He didn't want to admit that he's driving a Ford. That's what it is. All of his neighbors
he knows
have general.
Hate him.
All of his neighbors have General Motors, and he didn't want to admit that he drove a Ford.
That's right.
Okay, Francis, what city do you live on, and what's your address?
don't tell him.
I'm teasing you. All right, Francis. Thank you very much for trusting us. All right.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. All right.
Mike is your next caller.
All right. Real quick, though. Renee.
Yes.
Okay. R12 and R134, the two Freons that we've grown up around.
Okay.
It lasts how many years in the atmosphere?
I don't know. I said 31st.
Okay. 130.
Well, 130
years. 130
years. Wait a minute. Has R12 been out 130 years?
No. It lasts in the atmosphere.
How do they know that? It hasn't even been around for 130
you
years
know what?
To
you
measure
can,
it.
You can ask them, okay?
I think you were reading a bad article.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No. No, if R12's been out since the 50s and they can measure it in the atmosphere, then they know it's not gone from 1950 to 2017.
Okay, how many years is
but
that?
But perhaps maybe the R12 and the R134 in the atmosphere has degraded 50%. So they go, well, it's already 50 years, so we're going to go to 150 years.
Oh,
I don't know.
But it didn't say that.
You're asking me to explain somebody else's research.
I'm just trying to make sure you
All right, let me tell you a stupid
about this.
Okay. The new Freon that is in only one out of 10,000 cars.
Okay.
It's called 1234YF. And we haven't even decided what we're going to call it, but everybody's calling it YF right now.
Okay.
How long does it last?
I don't know.
4 days. So put that in your hat and smoke it.
Okay, what'd they do, let some go to measure it?
They may have, but they've done it for 4 days.
Because if only one in 10,000 cars has it, they... Shouldn't even have
I'm
a leak
sure
yet.
That they have some scientific way, but that's the reason why the new YF is out.
Where'd now, you get this information?
From science. Grab your calculator. Okay? Take 20 times 16.
Okay.
That's 20 pounds of refrigerant in a can times 16 ounces.
320.
And then take $700 and divide it by 320.
Okay. Oh, I know Jim could just do this right off.
I know he could.
Hold on.
Oh, God.
I know. Sorry.
I
don't like your calculator.
Okay. Well, if you hadn't broke the last one, I wouldn't have bought that at Walmart. But you go ahead and figure it out. I'm going to talk to Michael. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm better if I wasn't...
handicapped.
If I wasn't handicapped today, Michael, if you know what I mean.
Hey, I got a 1999 F-250 Ford diesel 7.3. It's got about 300,000 on it.
Okay.
Check engine light comes, we don't ride it, it's not a daily driver, it's like weekend driver.
Okay.
And check engine light comes on for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then once I get going driving, it turns off, and I probably don't see it the rest of the day.
Okay. What's important is... There's going to be some history in the computer. So it's going to store that, hey, I turned on code 301, but it's off now.
Mm-hmm.
So you can.
I took it to AutoZone yesterday. I put the code reader on it, and it just kept coming up air. Didn't have any codes, and the light was off.
Okay.
I can't get it there with the light on.
I understand. Well, the air code bothers me more than anything else because in spite of the fact that I think it's a bad idea to go to a three-whiskered kid that's 17 years old and have the Jim Botsko just did it for you.
Yeah, that's
I just went in there because I was at Home Depot and it was right next door.
No.
I was like, oh, well, let's try it.
No, I was going to send you there because they do it for free. But the air code means that their scan or their code reader cannot communicate with your truck. So maybe we lost a communication wire, maybe we have a fuse blown. There'll be something going on there, and more than likely, if you take it to your regular garage, they're going to say to you, my scanner. Now, the code reader is like a pencil, and a scanner is like a computer that can jumble numbers 4,000 long.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a big difference between a scanner. So
absolutely.
That's what you're going to have to do. Now, in the absence of any drivability problems, and remember the check engine light is yellow, doesn't say red that you got to park it, but I would take it in. Mm-hmm. Now, what part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay. Well, I'd go to Strictly Diesel. Go talk to Nate at Strictly Diesel.
Where are they
at? East of the 17, up there in Deer Valley.
Deer Valley.
Yeah, it's going to be Deer Valley, somewhere around there. But it's called Strictly Diesel. He's really good, and I'm quite sure he can tell you. But let me also tell you, I'll make a comment. Do you have any idea what that 99.73 is worth today?
Oh, it's worth a lot. I get probably people wanting to buy it all the time.
Yep, and you know why? You could.
There's 13,000.
Exactly. It's that. That vehicle, because everything between now and then was a big old piece of cow dung. The 7.3 was a monster motor. It lasted forever. It didn't overheat. It didn't have engine oil coolers that leak water or EGR coolers that leak water. It didn't have any of the problems that the 6.0 liter had. Plus, it was a bigger, stronger motor. So don't sell that cheap. When they ask you how much you want for it, just smile say, Wait a minute. You smile and you say, do you have a business card? Write your offer on the back of the business card. My wife's been bugging me. And when you get to the point where somebody offers you what you paid for it, you got to sell it.
2 minutes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You got to sell it.
Hey, really quick, I got one other thing.
Okay.
When I pull, like I said, I get offers on it a lot. I was gassing up and a guy says, hey, nice truck, blah, blah, blah. Hey, are you putting the Lucas injector cleaner in there? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've had 3 Fords. I've never done it. He goes, oh, I put a couple ounces of Lucas, I don't know, lubrication or something. Mm-hmm. He's putting in his tank. Now, I have diesel clean, octane boost, injector cleaner, performance improver. What do you suggest with this stuff? Should we be putting additive in that?
Now, I'm going to change your questions. Okay. Mark, do you add anything to your fuel? No. Why don't you add anything to your fuel? Because there's all these things out there that just make your motor love you and clean your injectors, and they make the tailpipe clean, and they make your toenails not stink, and they make your fingernails never get dirty, and they clean the wax out of your ears.
1 minute.
And I say, no, I'm not interested in all of that. There's no science to that. That's all marketing. They're selling you something to make you feel good. They're selling you something that you're going to do something nice for your motor, so therefore your motor's never going to do anything bad to you. If that were mandatory and if that were something that would benefit you, your garage would be telling you that, and so would probably the manufacturer of your truck.
But
and you know what? That can add 50 cents a gallon to your fuel costs, depending on the price of the bottle and how often you use it. So you have to kind of be careful. But
I've never used it before.
Okay. I'm not one to tell you what to do because you sound like a senior citizen just like me. I'm not trying to hurt your feelings.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
But I'm just telling you.
Hey, it's north of Deer Valley off of I-17 and south of Pinnacle Peak. So.
Okay, that's Strictly Diesel. I knew she was here for a good reason. I got to go, but we'll be back right after this.
Again, here's Mark.
Oh boy, if you folks had any idea what goes on behind the scenes during the breaks, you would just die. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Imports. They're in the northeast portion of Tempe. They're just south of the 202, just west of the 101. They've been around since 1972. David owns IMM Auto Service, and he works on all kinds of cars. But he specializes in the cars that make the rest of us run and hide. Volvo, Saab, Fiat, Alfa Romeo. David is an expert. Him and his staff are experts. They have the parts. They have the knowledge to fix your car. So if you have a Toyota and a Saab in your garage and you live close to David, then you should use him, because now you don't have to go to two places. You don't have to take your Toyota to this place and your Saab to this place. So David does really good work. But again, he specializes in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. They're close to ASU, IMM Auto Service.
Greg is your first caller.
Greg, you saved me from certain...
Thank you for calling, Greg.
Extinction. Thanks, Greg. I'm listening, Greg. What's up?
I'm bringing my 210 Ford Fusion into the local Ford dealer here in Peoria for a recall, fuel tank canister. It's a recall.
Uh-huh.
And when I go in there, last time I brought it in, they called me up, and it needed all these different things. They put these things on the wheels that needed wheel alignment and this. How do I avoid that when I just ask the service writer or service manager, all I want is just the recall done?
I've got an answer for you. I got an answer
for you. I just changed the cabin filter and the air filter.
Okay. This is bad in our industry, and I'll tell you why. They're making cars so much better now than they ever were before. You see, when you bought a brand new car, you don't even have any service due until 60, 70, 80,000 miles. Oil changes and rotate your tires, there's no fluids, there's no spark plugs, there's no belts, there's no hoses, there is nothing. So, what's everybody going to do? Starve? Or when Greg comes in,
upsell.
Well, you're using a nice word, but,
upsell.
Yeah. Now, here's what you do. So you call and they call you and they say, hey, your car's ready. And so did they at that time tell you that you need a lot of stuff?
Oh, no, this happened in the past. I'm bringing it in next week, and I just wanted to avoid that situation.
No, in the past, did they tell you when they called you and told you your car's ready, did they try to sell you on the phone or when you got there?
No, they tried to sell me on the phone.
Okay, and here's what you say. You say, you know what, I just don't really have time for this. This is what I would really like you to do. I would like you to write down exactly what you see and what I need and the price. Three things. What you see, what I need, and the price. Then I'm going to ask you for one thing, if you wouldn't mind at all. Just grab my owner's manual and point to the page it says, I need that. Now, and then sign your name to that ticket. So you go ahead and print my ticket, because you can print it, because there's no charge on it, because I'm in for a recall. And then just sign your name across there and put your phone number. And then when I decide to have this done, I'll know who to call back. And I guarantee you they won't do that. Not no independent shop that's waiting to upsell you, no dealership, no chain store. None of them will do it, because they know you're going to take it somewhere else, and somebody else is going to say this list isn't valid. So it's everything on your car is symptom-driven, Greg. It's driven by two things, a stopping point in your owner's manual, or you've got a symptom. In your alignment, if it pulls left or pulls right, or if the tires are wearing abnormally, yes, you need an alignment. If it doesn't pull left or pull right and your tires are wearing nice and flat, you don't need an alignment. That's all there is to it.
Okay, because the last time I brought it in, when I was waiting to get picked up, I saw they had these protrusions off the all the four tires.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what that was.
Well, they're hanging
heads.
Something
on the wheels?
Yeah, that's called hanging heads. And so we're going to put a head on each wheel, and then the machine's, it talks to this big computer, and it goes, oh, now let me explain something. Now put the palm of your hand 6 inches apart, or at least envision that, okay? Okay, you with me? So on the left side, 6 inches, and on the right side, 6 inches. That's the spread of where you can be. Okay? So if the red arrow is a 16th of an inch outside that 5 inches, then the red arrow the green arrow turns red, and the kid goes, oh my God, he needs an alignment. But in reality, we're talking about half of a human hair. So, but because the arrow's red, that means you're bad. Now, never mind that the direction of the red arrow says nothing. So if your camber's supposed to be 1.2, and that's where it's supposed to be, and let's say this, 1.5 to 1.0, and it happens to be 1.6, so what? But
exactly.
But the arrow's red. The arrow's red. And that's the reason why this marketing strategy is, and now they have, I'll tell you what, a lot of guys have now, as you drive your car over these rollers, the computer will tell you your car's out of alignment. Here's the problem. The computer doesn't know what kind of car is going over the wheels, over the rollers. So, you know, it's whoever sets up the window. Now, it's true I could do the window, but the window would be so wide to encompass all the cars on the road, the information is completely ridiculous and not valid. So now that you've really wadded my panties up today, are you done?
Yes, I appreciate it. And try to listen to you every Saturday.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you very much.
Okay, fine.
All righty. Okay, so my point is this on the refrigerant, okay?
Okay.
We have been using R12 and R134 for
a while.
50 years. Okay. Well, R12 for 50 years. They just came out with this new YF refrigerant.
Okay. Yes.
We're selling those old refrigerants, two of them. We're selling those to the customer $3, $4 per ounce.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I asked you and Jim, and I gave you the wrong information.
There you go.
So
Jim,
I apologize.
You messed us up.
I messed you up. We used to buy the old refrigerant in 20-pound containers.
Right.
Now, this new stuff only comes in 10-pound containers.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to do the math all over again, okay? Mm-hmm. We already know that there's 16 ounces per pound times 10 is 160 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
The cost, my cost on that refrigerant is $700. So 700 dot zero zero. Well, we got to turn it on first, I think. Here.
See,
there you go.
700.00
divided by 160.
Jim's
equals,
already got the answer for it.
Does he really? He beat me? It's $4.38.
Yeah.
$4.38 it costs us, where today on the old refrigerant, we're selling it for $1, $2, or $3, or $4.
Yeah.
$3. This costs us what the retail is. Now, that $5 an ounce is going to double in a lot of environments.
Sure.
So people are going to go from $2 an ounce to $10 an ounce.
Sure.
However, the new stuff's good for the environment, so that's why it costs so much. And they say that it cools every bit as good as the 12 and 134 did. That's a good idea. And but the price is going to come down as soon as this machine that does this work, and as more cars get the YF refrigerant.
Yeah, that's the way all of them have been. They've all started going down, except, well, the R12 is getting, you know, extinct now,
yeah,
so
it
we
is.
Don't have a lot.
Now, the new cars right now are in the dealers under warranty.
Mm-hmm.
So the dealers have the equipment, but so do we.
Right.
We just bought a machine the other day. So we can suck out their new refrigerant, clean it, put it back in, and then add an ounce or two, whatever they need. But right now, the independent market's us. We've seen one car in the last year, which prompted us to look at this and buy some refrigerant and buy the piece of equipment. Do you remember what the piece of equipment costs?
Yeah.
How much was it?
I don't know, $8,000.
It was $8,000.
Yep.
And so that piece of equipment allows us now to be proficient in removing, measuring, cleaning, and reinstalling that new refrigerant for customers. It's better than what we used to do. We used to just let it, in the old days, we let it into the atmosphere.
Right.
But in the middle days, we sucked it out, but we had no way of knowing what we sucked out.
Yeah.
So if your car held 18 ounces, we'd just take it out, and we'd put 18 ounces back in, and we'd charge you for 18. Yeah. Today, with the electronic dipsticks, I like to call them electronic dipstick, you have 15 ounces, and is that what I said the first time, 15?
16.
Okay, 16 ounces. I take out 10. I'm going to give you back your 10, but then just charge you for 6.
Yeah.
Now, there's a labor charge associated with all that, but at least you're not buying all the refrigerant again.
Yeah, and the guys had to take a test and pass it in order to use this machine and
right.
do all that. So
right. This eliminates the garages, and the guys in their garages pulling this off. That's
yeah.
not something that they're going to be able to pull on. All right, so Greg at the Fusion, I need to write upselling, and that's that is a problem just because cars are made so well. And frankly, there's so little maintenance on a new car today between now and 60, 75,000 miles that you have to live off oil changes and tire rotations.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, tell us where it said that in your owner's manual. But what they're using is, well, we're in a harsh environment, so you need to do it sooner than what your owner's manual tells you. So.
And what do I say confidentially about that?
Confidentially,
yeah.
I can't say it
yeah.
on the air.
The fact of the matter is everybody wants to believe that the car in Arizona is different than anywhere else in the United States. That's not true. These cars are designed for Interstate 10 from Bakersfield, California to Florida, which is the hottest area of the entire United States. It's also set for the minus 40, 50, 60 degree Minnesota, North Dakota, Idaho, Montana temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So this hype, this idea that Arizona is an island in the United States and we must, instead of a 30,000 mile call for a cooling system flush, we need to do it at 15. That is unadulterated bull manure. That's unadulterated bull manure. That car, it can be sold in Arizona, and it can be sold in Minnesota, and it doesn't make any difference. The intervals, the what's the word I'm looking for here? The service intervals are the same.
Okay.
So that's just if I had my way, I would arm customers with hockey sticks. And when that came out of the service writer's mouth, they'd just slap him upside the head with a hockey stick.
Oh, my goodness. You would be causing a lot of trouble.
You know, it's just, it's disheartening because our industry, for the large part of us, we care about
good
our customers.
Guys, yes.
Yeah. We care about our customers. And there's many of us, we're not the only ones. There is many in this city and all over the United States that have determined that if you just do what needs to be done, there'll be a path to your door. Mm-hmm. If you just become credible and you really can fix their symptoms and you really do a good job and you really have a fair price, then they don't have to upsell nothing. How many shops are like us? Right now, we're swamped with work. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of guys out there that are swamped, and we don't upsell.
Right.
And if we do say, you need it, we tell them why, and we give them a price, but there's no high-pressure sales at all.
And they come back. They come back.
And they come back to a lot of the shops that are on our list,
you
or
bet.
If not all of them.
Yeah.
All righty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's been an argument at the Salem House. We're up here at the ranch. This morning it was 42 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Salem goes out in the morning with her cup of coffee. And
you know, it's 17. We got to take a break. We'll see you.
I'll finish the story after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem and Renee Salem sitting here at your service. The phone lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 508-0960, 508-0960. If you have a car question.
I didn't get that.
You didn't get that? 508-0960. If you have a car question or you have a dilemma, you're welcome to call us. Let me tell you about where we're at. We're up north.
Well, wait a minute. First,
right.
You need to do a...
I'll talk. All right. Larry Harker's Auto Repair is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Ellen runs the front, Bob runs the back. He's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. He has tenacity that is matched by few other technicians. He has the ability to see and understand cars, electrical systems, and analyze them without going in very, you know, he doesn't go down too many dead-end streets. He's really, really good. 38th Avenue and Indian School. If you've got a car and your conversation starts with somebody in the lunchroom, you say, I've had my car to everywhere in town and nobody can fix, da-da-da, then you need to go to Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. So we're up here at the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, this morning it was like 42, 43 degrees. And so we get up about 5, or at least you were up about 5, and you were out on the back patio overlooking the pasture and the meadow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, folks, it's important to understand that in September, the elk are rutting. And rutting means is they're making babies. Okay? So in September, there's bulls and cows out there in the pasture, and all night long they make noise. Yeah, they're talking to one another, but they're making noise. And so... Renee likes to go out in the morning just before dawn and take her coffee, and the bulls and the cows are kind of moving into the hills at that point. And we saw a 7-pointer the other day with 7 points on one side. So it's really kind of neat. Now in June, the babies come. So the middle of June all the way through July, the babies come, and we can have, I don't know, as many as 90 mothers. That's not very often, but
right.
Certainly between 25 and 75 mothers,
mm-hmm.
along with that many babies.
Yes.
And sometimes we have to take a picture of the meadow in order to count all the animals that are out there. So anyway, this morning Renee was complaining because she went out on the patio, she was drinking her coffee, and she smelled cigarette smoke.
Oh my goodness, you are so crazy.
And so I guess that they
so
were done.
Did somebody give you a cigarette that I don't know about?
No, it wasn't okay. Me. You said you smelled it off the pasture.
No, I didn't.
So the elk,
you're making stuff up.
The bulls were smoking a cigarette. They all went into the forest, and that was it.
Oh.
You know, you changed your story on me.
No,
yes,
I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No,
yes, you did.
You just made more up.
No. All right.
What else you got this week?
I can go through some of my emails and oxygen sensors. I'll do oxygen sensors. Oxygen sensors, this is another article, have a limited life. I agree. They are sluggish. I agree. But you have to wait till there's symptoms. And an oxygen sensor symptoms is typically an obvious loss in fuel economy. So a failed O2 sensor cannot produce a signal to the computer, and because the computer doesn't get a signal, it's going to turn on a light. However, I continue to say, and it's been proved beyond a reasonable doubt, that only 25% of the time when we have an oxygen sensor code do we actually replace the oxygen sensor. When you replace the oxygen sensor under those circumstances, you're killing the messenger. The oxygen sensor is screaming to the computer, give me more gas. And the computer says, I have the faucet wide open. And the oxygen sensor says, I don't care, I don't have enough fuel. Here's the problem. The fuel filter's plugged up. So even though the faucet's open all the way, the filter's plugged up. So the supply, the volume, and the pressure is substandard. So you don't replace the oxygen sensor, which is going to kill the messenger. You go in and figure out the fuel pressure and volume is substandard. So 25% of the time, the oxygen sensor code necessitates an oxygen sensor. Here's the problem. The problem is you go to the auto parts store and the three-whiskered kid comes out and tells you you need an oxygen sensor. And then he's going to tell you you need three of them. Because if one failed, the other two are not far behind it. So and some cars have six oxygen sensors. So they're going to sell you all the different oxygen sensors. You're going to go home and put them on, and that check engine light's going to come back on. So then you bring it to me. And I fix the problem. And in the process, when I fixed the problem, I saw you had a dirty air filter, and I put an air filter in, and I charged $8.95. You come unglued because I sold you something that you didn't ask for, and I sold you something that you swear you didn't need. I sold you an air filter for $8. They just sold you $300 worth of oxygen sensors, and you're not mad at them? You don't go back to them and say, wait a minute. You said that it's an oxygen sensor code, and you said that an oxygen sensor would fix it, and you said you have three, you ought to buy all three, because if one fails, the other two aren't far behind.
And I'm telling you what, I can't tell you how many times people say, I went to AutoZone, yeah, and they told
O'Reilly's,
me, O'Reilly's, or whatever, all of yes, them. And I need an oxygen sensor. I mean, I think that's like the number one thing that people tell them.
A vacuum leak will cause an oxygen sensor code. A plugged fuel filter will cause an oxygen sensor code. A catalytic converter problem will cause an oxygen sensor control. An engine miss will cause an oxygen sensor code. I could go on and on and on. The fact of the matter is that's what hurts our industry right mm-hmm. there. And all they're interested in is selling parts. But I wish they would hold me to the same standard that they hold them. The other way around. Yeah. Same standard. Because we went and did a heater core not too long ago, and we took the cabin filter out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was filthy. So Scott put it in the box,
right,
a new box, and we put a new one in.
Mm-hmm.
And the customer was upset. And yeah, we were over our estimate by a couple of bucks. So the service writer took the customer out to the car and took the old cabin filter off and said, we were there. It's no charge. We mm-hmm. just replaced it. Let me go get a new one. When got a new one, showed the customer a new one. If you want us to, we'll put yours back in.
Mm-hmm.
And the customer said, no, that's okay. So, yes, there are times that you do while you're there.
Sure.
But that's why we always give them their old parts back, is because if you're not happy, we'll put your old parts back in.
Yeah.
Well, that lady didn't want that stinky thing back in her car.
No, it was a mess. I think I remember the one you were talking about.
You're thinking
about
of the Jeep. That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, anyway, it's just oxygen sensors. If a high-mileage oxygen sensor has failed, many professional technicians recommend replacing all the O2 sensors at the same time to reduce the chance of comebacks or problems down the road. Let me ask you a question. That sentence tells you whose butt is being saved by them upselling you to all the oxygen sensors.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shop and the technician.
Yep.
Let me read it again. If a high-mileage O2 sensor has failed, many professional technicians recommending all of the O2 sensors, oxygen sensors, at the same time, not for any other reason other than to reduce the chance of comebacks or problems down the road.
Yep.
So if you do one oxygen sensor and they leave and the light comes on, it only means one thing.
1 minute.
You misdiagnosed it.
Yeah.
Or something's wrong with your diagnosis because that light should
have. If they replace them all.
If they replaced one.
Okay.
If the light comes back on, it's either you misdiagnosed it or your oxygen sensor's bad or your diagnostics were bad.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things.
I know.
602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. Getting kind of lonesome here. Air Park Auto Service is in Scottsdale. They've been open since 1985. Nadine is the owner. They have a state-of-the-art clean green facility. They have the latest diagnostic tools. They're on Hayden Road, just south of Frank Lloyd Wright, and then you go east on Raintree. So they're about three or four blocks south of Frank Lloyd Wright, east of Hayden. They've been around a long time. I've known Nadine and her husband who died for a very long time, and I can assure you it's an honest, good auto repair shop that knows how to diagnose and repair your car. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Renee's gone, so I can finally start talking about cars, and I'm really glad to do that with you, because Kurt's Auto Repair is one of my shops up on Bell and I-17 Northeast Corner. Kurt's is a great guy. He has Eric and Jeff, both master technicians. One of them writes service, and the other runs the shop. These young guys are really good at their skills. They're really good at their crafts. They are great communicators and diagnosticians, so they're not going to be guessing on your car. So if you live anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a repair shop, may I respectfully suggest that you call Kurtz, get an oil change, and just see how you fit. Steve, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. How are you? Great
good.
Show.
Thank you.
Hey, I've got a 81 Wagoneer. It's sort of a hobby vehicle, and I'm up in North Phoenix, 40th and Shea, and looking for a shop up this way. Wondering who you might recommend.
You know, I just don't have anybody in that area right now. I used to refer to Kelly Clark at 40th and Bell, and his shop, he retired, and he sold his shop to someone I'm not prepared to hang my hat on. Shea Boulevard. Where do you work? Can we work that out? Do you work anywhere else?
I'm up near the auto park.
Okay.
Or the air park.
Okay. Well, how about Air Park Auto? How about the at Raintree and Hayden Just Eat? Your 81 Wagoneer, I would suggest this. Even in my shop, I'm telling you, just pick one thing out at a time. That's it. I want you to dress this. And then when they call you with a diagnosis, you say to my shop and everybody else's, are you sure? Because I'm not going to pay for guessing. I'm paying for fixing. And they say, yes, we're sure. And then after they're done, did you see anything else? Yes, we did, or no. And then you say, well, would you do this? It's one thing at a time, because your Wagoneer is not anything like, you know, a new computerized car today. But I can assure you, Air Park's got a couple of gray-haired guys that knows your Wagoneer inside out.
Just what I'm looking for. Actually, I use Kelly Clark for everything else I've got, and I've been really happy with them, but I saw they got sold to AAA or somebody, and I don't know if you I guess you don't recommend them anymore.
Well, I don't.
Seems like all the same guys in there.
Well, it's Kelly. Kelly's gone, and the root of his crew is gone, and he has another shop over at 12th and Glendale. If you want to drive over there, 12th and Glendale, there's another shop over there. But Kelly retired. Kelly and I are really good friends. But AAA has gone from towing to auto repair. And I've interviewed a lot of technicians that have worked there. There is a pricing structure, a pay structure that's quite different than the rest of our industry. And okay. I'm not prepared to recommend somebody who doesn't have 5 years experience, isn't under the same management in that 5 years, and hasn't got a lot of good reviews on the internet. So that prevents me from the guys that are under 5 years. That's my standard answer. 5 years, and I can't address your request. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, I found him through you folks, and understand.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling, Steve. Thank you very much. Bruce, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I got a oil question.
Okay.
I've got a 2011 2500 HG Duramax motor in it. I've never had. This is my first diesel. I bought this back in 2014.
Okay.
And a year ago, I had the oil change at dealership, and it's tracking the percentage. And it was down to about 37%. and I had about 6,000 miles on the truck, the oil change at that point. And I guess the oil sensor tracker times out at when you hit 1 year.
No.
No longer tracks the percentage of the oil. So I got a message from, OnStar, basically, you need to get your oil changed. And the dealer said, yeah, you got to come in and get the oil changed. So my question is, I got 6,000 miles. I got a year on the oil change, and it's a quart down now. So my question is conventional oil that's in there. So
Hold on. We're up against some time here. First of all, there's two kinds of oils for your car, for your diesel. There's a 1540, which is either going to be a conventional or a semi-synthetic.
1 minute.
And that's going to run you 5,000 to 8,000 miles. Then a 540 is a full synthetic, and that will certainly go your year. So it depends on if it's a 1540, 5,000 to 8,000 mile change, or if it's a 540, which is annually or a 12,000 mile change. I use the 540 in all my diesels, and I go year to year. Your oil light is working off an algorithm. So it looks at how long you idle, how long you're traveling at highway speeds, how many cold starts, how many hot starts, how many times you floorboarded it, how hot the oil got, how cold the oil is, the average oil temperature. It's looking at all of that. That's the reason why every time it pulls up and says bingo, it's a different miles. However, in my Dodge truck, and I've had Duramaxes too, I love Duramaxes, I'm always a 500 miles one way or the other from where the sticker is. I have figured out my algorithm. And so I just put a sticker up there. And if I'm 500 miles one way or another, I don't care. So as far as I'm concerned now, as far as OnStar is concerned, you need to know something. They track you. They know where you're at. They're going to sell you everything in the world. That's what it is. It's a marketing tool. Obviously, if your airbags deploy, they're going to call for help. But there's a lot of those kinds of things going on out there. And what you're going to hear from OnStar in the very near future is, hey, Bruce, I see that you're due for an oil change, and I just happened to check, and just right around the corner from you is a General Motors dealer, and I called, and they can take you in right now. So if you've got an extra 20 minutes, Bruce, you just make a right turn at the next light, go left, go down two blocks and turn left, and I've already got, and you'll see Josephine, and she's your service rider, and they'll do it while you wait. That's what you're going to hear. That's what people are already hearing. So it creates the perception that that's something you have to do now, but it isn't. So you're welcome to do it wherever you want and use a name brand oil. But once again, 540 is good for 8 to 12,000 miles and 1540 is good from 5 to 8,000 miles. So the kind of oil you use or the weight of the oil you use dictates your interval. That's cut and dried, and I'm an oil expert. You're going to have to take my word for that, but I've testified in court about oil, and I've built a quart of oil myself, and I understand the properties, and I understand why this one goes longer than this one, but that's what we sell. We only sell two diesel oils. We sell 540 and 1540, and we ask our customers, do you want to go annually or you want to go every 8 or 9 months? That's what it boils down to. Alrighty, when we come back, we have open line 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, or 11 o'clock, I should say. And thank you for participating in the show. We're going to go to Rob first. Rob, you're first. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good, thanks. Hey, quick and easy questions. I used to do all my business with Whitey's in Scottsdale, which I was extremely happy with, but I don't work in that area anymore. I'm up at 35th Avenue and let's call it Pinnacle Peak. I wondered if you had a suggestion for me.
You could come south down the I-17. And there is a really good shop at Deer Valley and I-17 on the northwest corner. And that's Tom at Action Auto Repair. And then there's Kurtz a little further south at I-17 and Bell. And I'm quite sure both of them will take you to work.
Tom or Kurtz?
Yeah. Tom is called Action Auto.
Action Auto.
Yeah, and he owns the place,
okay.
Tom. And then Kurtz is owned by Kurtz. And either one of those guys have been on my list for a very long time, and I'm quite sure you'll be happy with them.
Now, I have the second question. I've had a indicator light for one of my tire pressure indicators.
Yes.
And I understand that that might just be a magnet or something. Is that something I could just go to a, you know, a discount tire, or, you know, should I take it to Action Auto?
No. No, what you do first is you check all the air pressure in all your tires. And if you find one low, then you bring it up to this to where you found the rest of them, and the light should go out within a couple days. So the tire pressure monitoring system is typically an inflation alert. Now, what happens a lot of times is this. You have red, white, and blue and black sensors, and the computer sees that the red and white one are on the fronts and the blue and black one are on the back, but somebody rotates your tires. And it doesn't tell the computer that they rotated your tires. So the computer sees the red one, it thinks is on the driver's front, is low, but really it's on the back driver's. So that's why you have to check all four of them, because the computer can be off. Because it thinks the red one is still on the driver's front, and it's not. It's on the driver's rear. So it is true that when the sensors go bad, you have to break the tire down and replace the transmitter inside. Then you have to reprogram the computer that says that the black sensor's gone, and I'm going to put a yellow sensor in there. And I use the colors just for the form of ease of conversation. And so that's what needs to be done. And what you're talking about is really easy for us to walk around, and we have a certain piece of equipment, and we talk to the tire and say, which sensor do you have? And then we tell the computer. But most of the time, there's about a 5-pound range up and down. So most of the time, you're outside of that range. All I want you to do on your cold tires is put the low tire where the rest of them are at, and you should be fine. Okay?
Okay,
right.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much, Rob. Bill, you're up next.
Hi there, Mark. Appreciate your show. On my 2005 F-150, I'm going to change out the shocks and the strut assemblies. The weather's broken. I think I'll just fire up the air compressor, get out the impact, and put them on myself. I wasn't real excited with some of the labor quotes I got on it. So I guess my run-on question really is, as far as buying those strut assemblies, you know, what do you do? Who do you buy your strut assemblies from? You know, go back to Ford. I mean, they last 170,000 miles, or all of the aftermarket things.
Well, first of all, Ford doesn't make their shock absorbers. The brakes on your truck are made by Bendix. The alternator is made by Hitachi. Denso makes your mass airflow sensor. So it's a misnomer that you have to go back to Ford. You're buying somebody else's product in the box, and you're paying a premium for the part. So I would just, you know, I would call three or four shops and say to them, if you were going to be putting a name brand on my truck, what would that name brand be? And just call three or four shops. And I think you're going to find that most all of us use, you know, two or three different brands. We all have our favorites. But it's really going to be a matter of, I think once you find out which brand, it's going to be a matter of price. So if you got three shops that tell you that the Cadillac brand is the one they use, and you find out that you can buy the Chevrolet or Ford brand for half the money, then why not buy that for half the money?
Well, that's exactly where I'm going to go on it, because I've got more time than I do money on it. And I'm like anybody, I shop the internet.
The
prices are simply all over the place. I know well to throw out the very cheapest one and throw out the very highest one. And there's a cluster in the middle. And I don't know if Gabriel Monroe or anything else. And they have all their different qualities within their names,
right?
Which, you don't get everything within a name. I don't really know what a front shock, strut assembly should cost, whether a set should be $300 or $400 or $200.
Well, I'll tell
you. They're all over the place.
It depends on whether the upper mount is contained with it, and it depends on whether the spring is contained with it. So the strut is a three-part container. So a lot of people just sell the strut and they use your spring, but you already got 100-some-odd thousand miles on that spring. So your road height has changed. That spring has collapsed. So do you need a new spring? Probably. Now, on the upper mount,
Yes. It's
a doggone good idea to put that upper mount in there, because you don't want to do that again. So you take it off, you look at it, you
Correct.
Go, oh, it looks okay. You put it back on, it ain't okay. So I tell people, I would prefer to do the whole assembly. Especially, what did you say you had, 100-plus thousand miles?
170,000 miles.
Okay.
They've never been changed. You know,
right.
The front tires are company are actually rubbing themselves apart. You know, it's just time. And to me, it's changing apart. I don't think this is a highly analytical, unfortunately, highly technical thing. It's, you know, getting bolts out, line things up, and asking somebody to move someplace along the line.
All right. Well, I think you're going to – I want you to call me back and tell me if your thought process was correct. Would you do that?
Sure.
Just real quick, what kind of labor quotes did you get for all four?
You know, I didn't get per hours, but I was getting quotes for parts and labor anywhere from $800 to $1,400.
Okay.
I'm thinking the parts are $400, and, you know, I hate to say it, but it looks like 4 hours to me. So, you know, $800 didn't seem unreasonable. $14 did.
Okay. And then there's going to be a difference. The $800 might be just the strut and replacing all four struts. And that might be 4 and 4. The 1,000 or 1,200 may be strut, spring, upper mount, both sides. However, I'm betting you're going to need an alignment when you're done. So when you're done.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Okay. Then you're going to have alignment, and that adds another $80 to $100 to the ticket. So, but
correct.
I'm just
correct.
Saying that there's been more than one Ford truck driver bringing their truck in with the front end in pieces, and they said it's a little bit bigger than I thought. You have to have a spring compressor if you're going to use.
That may very well be.
Yeah, you have to have a spring compressor to get spring off. It ain't nothing that you're going to be able to use plastic ties and suck the spring together. And I'm not making fun of you.
No, I'm sure an assembly is the correct way to go. Yeah. That only makes sense to me. You know. Sometimes it's far better to put the money into the parts. I'm an old parts guy.
Okay.
Put the money into the parts, do the right parts. You know, then labor is whatever the labor is. But sometimes you can put too much labor in by trying to go easy on the parts. That's not really the right way to do it.
You're right. Mechanical
assembly like this.
You're exactly right. Because if you make me transfer your spring, that's an extra labor operation I don't have to do with the full strut and spring assembly. So you're exactly right.
No,
now,
no, no.
Stay. I want you to hang up, but I want you to hear my next piece, okay? I'd like you to stick around for 3 minutes, okay?
I'll turn the radio back up.
All right. Thank you. Folks,
all
righty. Folks, all the car manufacturers want you to buy their parts, Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, okay? Keep that in mind. Ford has come out with a brand new part called Omnicraft. Now, remember, Motocraft, Omnicraft. Now, Ford has always said you have to use our parts, you can't use anybody else's. That's what they've always said. So has Chevrolet, so has everybody else. Omnicraft is an all-new brand of replacement parts for all non-Ford cars. Think about that. Ford is now making a whole new brand called Omnicraft for everything but Fords. Now, Mark Salem, what's the most highly profitable things you sell? Oil filters, brake pads, rotors, calipers, loaded struts, starters, alternators, engine and cabin filters, brake master cylinder, and wheel hub assemblies. Those are the ones we make a licking on. We can buy them cheap. And so, therefore, we can drop your price a little bit, but we can still make good money. All right, so I'm going to read you the rest of this article. So, Ford intends to help their dealers grow their business by providing Omnicraft parts for Chevy's, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, and Honda. So they're going to provide an improved customer experience through competitive pricing, quality, and convenience. Now, that's exactly what I've been saying for 400 years, is the aftermarket has superior pricing, superior quality, superior convenience than Ford. Now, Ford doesn't make their own parts any more than Honda, Toyota, all the rest of them do. I just got through telling Bill that his truck is not built by a Ford factory. It's built by parts from every other vendor in the world. So, it says this. Our dealers are already feeling the impact of the new Omnicraft brand, says president of Global Ford Parts Customer Service. I am certain the customer response will be equally positive. Now, owners of non-Ford vehicles have access to quality parts at a competitively priced backed by Fords. Now, this is the same mouth that says you cannot buy aftermarket parts for our Fords. But they're saying you can buy aftermarket parts in a Ford box for your non-Ford. Can you tell my panties are wadded up?
For the launch, Ford focused on the most commonly requested parts, such as, you've heard this list before, oil filters, brake pads, rotors, calipers, loaded struts, starters, alternators, engine and cabin filters, brake master cylinders, and wheel hub assemblies. That represents the most common parts we put on your car. That is something that we all deal with on a regular basis. So, here's the dichotomy of this whole thing. Ford has always said for 50 years, our parts are the best. Now they're saying, we're going to have another class of parts called Omnicraft parts for all you other people, for all you other cars. And we're going to focus on customer experience, competitive pricing, quality, and convenience. So let me get this straight. These aftermarket parts that you found that you're going to sell to everybody else, again, are competitively priced, quality, and convenience, but yet those same aftermarket parts are not the same as the ones in the Motorcraft box. I don't get that. Folks, a part is a part, and the price dictates the quality most of the time. You all have heard of the word Gabriel and Monroe when it comes to shock absorbers for cars and trucks.
1 minute.
And there's a lot of other ones out there as well. The idea is trust your shop, because here's the deal. He's not going to put a cheap shock on your car knowing he's going to have to do it again. All of us understand quality. We're all trying to fix your car as permanently as we can. There is no financial benefit to us to sell you a cheap shock for a cheap price and it not get through warranty period. So all of us try to match the price with the warranty and the quality to give you the very best we can. So just remember, Ford's new Omnicraft part is now on the shelves. This tells me that they're not selling enough Ford parts, so now they've created a substandard line of parts called Omnicraft for everybody else to bring their parts profits back up. What other conclusion could you draw? Anyway, Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email address, mark@marksalem.com. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars, and we'd like you to join us. So we're here at 960. We'll be back next week.